My name is Katrina O'Sullivan. I'm a singer-songwriter from Tralee, originally from the Munster Bar in Tralee. And I'm also an author of 8 Irish language textbooks and a teacher as well of music and Irish.
Where did it all begin? You say you were very young when you discovered that you had a voice for singing.
You know, when I was a young child, I probably didn't realise I could sing at all. We grew up in the airport bar in Farnforth, where my parents rented the bar there. And probably the earliest evidence I was drawn to musical instruments was me banging the piano there and disturbing many a quiet pint being had by customers out there and making a racket. And then when I was going to national school in Farnforth, I suppose I was very much drawn to the tin whistle and the accordion. We were taught a little bit of traditional music in school, and that's probably my first experience or dipping the toe into the water of music. And then there was a 100-year anniversary event of the school, which was a big deal in the parish at the time when I was around 10. And the teacher happened to hear me singing a country song called From a Distance by Nancy Griffith. It was kind of the first song I ever really learned to sing. And she put me up singing on the side of a lorry in front of maybe 300 or 400 people, which was, that was my first audience. Like,
were
10.
You nervous?
As a child, you're totally unselfconscious. I think it's when you hit the teenage years you become more nervous, actually. As a child, I actually wasn't really nervous, because I think you're kind of unaware of yourself, you know, when you're a child. So yeah, I sang that song and it got a really strong reaction, and that's sort of the first time I realised, oh, you know,
I can do this.
Maybe I can sing. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're totally unaware of yourself when you're a little kid. And then the teacher said off the back of that to the parents, you know, maybe go and get her singing lessons and piano lessons. She's a bit of a flair for the music. So like that, I wasn't aware of it. You know, you're very, back in those days as well, you're very kind of unaware of yourself. You know, we weren't as self-aware as we are now. You know, you just sort of floated along. Mm-hmm. But I was definitely very kind of drawn to music instruments. That was what I did, like, at home. I'd be down in my room practicing for hours.
And were your family interested in musical instruments?
Yes, like my father's side of the family are hugely so, because a lot of my cousins now have gone off and done degrees in singing, and I have a cousin in a band, maybe a second cousin in a band in Killarney. So it seems to be very strong on my father's side. A lot of them were traditional instruments. My grandmother claimed we were related to Padraig O'Keefe, the famous Munster fiddle player, even though I don't know if she half making that up, but she claimed it anyway. And it's funny, on my dad's side of the family, they'd often assess people as well as of how good a singer they were. You know, that's nearly how people were rated, it. Jeepers, he's a great singer. They could have killed someone, like, or stabbed someone. They're a great singer, they're fine, you know, or a good dancer. So they're huge, huge into music. And then my mother was the one as well who really pushed us and drove us along, not in a showbiz mom type of way, just in a really nurturing, encouraging way. She loved music, and she would have loved, I think, if there had been, you know, the money and the opportunity for her to do it herself when she was a child. She was very artistic. She was very good, actually, at putting pen to paper and, like, writing little poems and essays. She was a history and Latin and Irish teacher herself. But I think that's where I get the writing part from, the songwriting part, because she would have loved putting pen to paper, and she was a very gentle, kind of sensitive person.
Is it difficult to write a song?
It can be. It's sometimes when you're feeling a strong emotion, it just pours out of you. Other times, if you try to sit down deliberately to do it, it can be. And it's funny, I've watched, like, you know, loads of the greats, you know, Monks and Paul McCartney, people like that, talk about songwriting. And when they're trying to explain it to people, like, there is no formula. You know, they're always asked, do you start with writing lyrics, or do you start writing a melody? And, well, for me anyway, it comes differently every time. Sometimes you might start with a melody. Sometimes you might start with one line of a lyric. Sometimes the two come together. Sometimes you might write lyrics and ask someone else to help you put the music to it. I've done it every sort of way. I think there's no formula at all. You know, it is, I do think it kind of is a, I would describe it like channeling. I do think it's kind of a God-given thing. Anytime I write a song, I'm always terrified I'll never be able to write the next one. You know, you never know where it's going to come from, like, because it comes from nothing in a way. You know, there's nothing, it's not tangible, it's not concrete, but it comes from emotions, I suppose, and feelings. And I suppose personally, I found it's when, you know, when I a strong emotion about something, whether it's just happy or sad or excited or whatever, that's when it tends to come the most naturally. And very often, actually, in recent years, again, I suppose when I was younger, it was nearly easier in one way, say, again, the less self-aware you are about it, or self-conscious, I suppose, is more, not self-aware, self-conscious, the more naturally it pours out of you. Then when I would have got a record deal around 24 with Rosette Records at the time, suddenly then it became a little bit more scary to sit down and write the song, because you're under pressure to write them. You know, they'd all poured out of me naturally with no pressure whatsoever, mm-hmm. up until the point, I suppose, where I went looking for record deals. Then you become, you know, you start thinking, you know, a little bit more about the whole thing, and you can nearly get a little freaked out with the pressure then of trying to write good songs.
Did you find then when they naturally flew out of you that you had more of a connection with those songs compared to the ones where you felt that little
bit
of pressure?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm honest, I had to take the pressure back off myself again in my late 20s to go back writing in a good way again, you know. I did write some nice songs when I was kind of being paid to sit at home and write them by the record company, but they'd come more naturally before I got the record deal. And then, you know, you have to sort of try and go back to the natural thing again to be able to write. You know, it's not something you can force. Like when you try, you can't just sit yourself down. Well, I can't anyway. Some people can, maybe America, they're professional songwriters and that. But for me, it always kind of had to come from a strong emotion about something. And we're all different. Now, sometimes, all right, when you'd sit in a room with somebody else, maybe they'd have an idea, you'd wind up teasing it out. Or, you know, I might come to them even with a couple of lines, even a verse written out. Again, it seems to happen very organically. And I've become a big fan of co-writing for that reason the last 10 years. Plus, I'm a very sociable person. And I get a great kick out of co-writing with other people and nurturing it along. You know, it's like a little bird and you're, you know, coaxing it to fly out of the nest. Like, that's nearly how it is with a song. You might only start off with a few modest lines, like, and you tease a song out of it. Mm-hmm. And you help each other kind of, you know, you use each other's best skills to help tease the song out. And there's a bit of magic to that too. And I do love working with people. So I've done a lot of co-writing with different people, I suppose over the last 15 years, like the likes of Gavin Murphy, who was musical director of Celtic Woman. He was the first person to produce my album back in the day. Now, my first album was all songs I just wrote on my own, bar one that I co-wrote, my friend John Walsh, where I'd done a lot of work with him for ads and film and that, but all the rest had been done on my own, say in the early 20s. But then I became a big fan of the co-writing, and Gavin would have helped me arrange a lot of songs, and then I was co-writing some songs with John Walsh from, you know, continued on, and with Charlie McGettigan and with Johnny Brady, who's a well-known country singer, and I do love that, I must say, as well, because I do love, I suppose, chatting to people, liaising with people, and then maybe going into the studio and you'd sort of buzz from the other person, the excitement of recording a song and
it's
that.
It's nice in a sense because, you know, you both have two different journeys in life, but you both enjoy the same thing. And bringing that together and connecting it must be amazing to see what the outcome is.
Oh, it's fabulous. And, you know, you end up getting very close to people through the process too. Like that's, for me, music is about connecting with people. You know, you're connecting with your audience when you're singing. You're connecting with the other person when you're writing together. And it really is like sometimes, you know, it's like tearing a page out of your diary and sending it off to them. It's very nerve-wracking as well. But I suppose I've been on a big journey of self-development, I guess, the last 7, 8 years in particular. And I suppose the thing I've come to realise is that even for people who, you know, like the likes of Charlie McGettigan, who's won the Eurovision and so on, and they'd be very renowned songwriters, you know, no matter how established you are, there's a little bit of fear for everybody in sending off a new fledgling of an idea. And the first thing very often, you know, these very established people, when they were writing with me, would say to me is, if you don't like this now, Katrine, it's fine. And that's the very same thing I'd have been saying to them. And I kind of came to realise, like, we all have that tiny bit of fear of rejection, I suppose, that, you know, if they send an idea to me, they don't know will I like it or not like it. And if I send something to them, they may like it and not like it. And you have to try and kind of let go of that and go, it is not the end of the world.
And not to take it to heart either.
Exactly, not to take it to heart. And through working on your own confidence and your own self-development, I find with music, that's massively important because, you know, it took me a while actually to kind of establish the difference between self-confidence and self-esteem. I always thought I had very high self-esteem because I was very used to getting up in front of crowds of people from a young age singing. And I realised that behind that type of confidence, I maybe wasn't quite as confident as I thought, like deep down and putting yourself out there. And there were a certain number of years where I may have been overly perfectionist about things, you know, because I got the record deal in the 20s and I was kind of fearless in pursuing that. Put the album out there and it went really well, but then one or two things maybe didn't go my way or didn't go the way I wanted them to go, even though we got great radio play and the songs charted. Do you know, maybe not everything transpired in the way I wanted it to. And in those days you didn't have any social media either, so you know, you didn't have control over actively promoting yourself as much as you would as you can these days. You were reliant on other people to do it for you.
To get the name out there.
Yeah. And, you know, so sometimes you felt like you were sitting at home, you know, or they didn't want you doing X, Y, and Z gigs, and you know, you were kind of getting frustrated, going, "I should be out, you know, doing more." And these days, people can do a huge amount themselves on Instagram and Facebook and all the rest of it, you know, and YouTube. But you can be more proactive, and I think again, something I learned over the years, I suppose, that it's very important whether you're signed with a record deal or not. You need to drive it yourself, you know, because you know where you want to go, you know how you want to sound. Now, I was given great creative freedom when I put out my album. I was able to do whatever I wanted musically, but I suppose from a business point of view, I was just learning the ropes myself. And do you know, it's a tough old business. And you know, with great successes, like the songs got into the top 30, and there was one song, "I'll Be There," it was like the third most played song in Ireland that month that we put it out. But I might have had good news and bad news on a phone call in one day. Like, I might have got the phone call that, yeah, it's the most played song, but then I might have been told, oh, you know, we're not going to make a video for the song, even though to go to England we need a video, and the head of BBC Radio loves the song, but you know, we have to, the PR company are saying we need a video, but the company don't want to make a video because it's more money. And do you know, so you run a total emotional roller coaster.
That must have been so hard for you at, you know, in your 20s.
It's a lot to process.
It is, you know, and it's, it's a big journey as well.
It's a big journey. And I mean, you know, you're sort of flying blind. Like, there's no set, there's no set trajectory, you know, there's no compass. Like, you're sort of feeling your way along, hoping that you'll have a bit of luck, a lot of luck involved. Yes, you have to work hard too, and you have to have the songs there, and you have to have the good voice, and you have to, you know, present yourself well. But even with all that, there's no, it's not like someone designs a little business plan for you there and you follow that. Like, you know, it's, it, there's no set course with music. And that's one of the things that's, it's very exciting. It makes it very exciting, but it also makes it a bit of a roller coaster with lots of ups and downs for most people. And some sometimes, like, you know, back in those days, you'd be getting a phone call and you'd have good and bad news all in the one call. And your, my emotions anyway, I speak for myself, were all over the place. But I suppose as time goes on, you learn to manage that better. And it's funny, even talking to my brother-in-law who's in sport, Billy Denny, who set up the Kerry Football Club, you know, say for the senior players. We'd often chat about that, like, there's a lot of similarities between the world of sport and the world of music, because, you know, you win some and you lose some. A lot of it is a little bit of luck as well. And you have to learn to manage your emotions, and I suppose keep yourself fairly level. And that's hard to do. That takes years to get to that point. Like, now I'm quite good at that. And plus, I suppose I've children and I've other things to kind of distract me as well from when it was just you as a single person, totally obsessed with your music
but
and your career.
That was your world.
Oh, it was my everything. It was my everything. And I would have been quite obsessive about it, I suppose, which is necessary to get anywhere with it. And I still am. But it's just, I suppose, you have to learn to manage your emotions around it, because otherwise you'd be, it
takes you over.
You'd be a bit of a wreck.
And tell me this, you know, obviously you say your dad runs the Munster Bar, and you know, you coming in after getting those record deals and whatnot, like, I imagine that you got amounts of support inside there from people coming.
Oh, I did. I mean, my mother would have been my number one support, because she was the one that would have been, you know, really, I suppose, driving us down to singing lessons and piano lessons, and, you know, listening to us in the hall and, you know, listening to you singing and maybe giving us a few little pointers of what we needed to do to improve. And, you know, it meant the world to her. Now, she was someone, I suppose, who very much lived, you know, for her children and through her children as well. She was a very dedicated mother. So she would have been my number one support. And my dad is massive into music as well. And the customers in the bar, so they love singing and they love music. And again, it was a great place to sometimes even try out songs you wrote yourself. Like, I might play, you know, a classic hit on the piano and singing, and then I'd throw in one of my own songs, and you'd just gauge the reaction, and you'd know then, was your song strong enough to stand up, you know, with the well-established hit songs? Did it hold its own, you know, by their reaction, you know, if people quietened down to listen, or if they, you know, they clapped. And I wouldn't say a word, I'd just play it, you know. And then they might ask you, oh, what's the name of that song? I haven't heard that before. And you say, oh, that's actually one of my own. But people would tell you, and it was a great testing ground for that, in a very natural way. And yeah, the customers would have been very supportive, and they still are, you know, whenever I'm putting out a single or doing a concert, they have a great interest. And I suppose a lot of the customers that come in, they're nearly like our family, because it's a local pub. So a lot of them are going there. I've known them since I was 10 or 11, you know. So they're kind of like extended family at this stage, and they'd be very supportive, yeah.
What kind of reactions have you gotten from songs that you've released? Or what's the one that you'll never forget when someone came up to you and said, this is what the song reminded me of and meant to me?
I suppose there's two big ones, and I suppose it's always the poignant ones, you know, that you'd go for. But recently enough, I sang a song called Still of the Night that I wrote about the passing of my mother. It was when she was very ill with cancer, actually, I wrote it. And I sang it on the Daniel O'Donnell show. It was my first time singing it on television. I haven't actually released it yet, and I'd like to release it, and I'd be getting to that. But a lot of people, even including my students in school, came up and said they really loved that song. And the other one I wrote that got me the record deal years ago was a song called I'll Be There. And I wrote that for my dad after his brother passed away in a fire at 28. He had a bar in Cork, and he tragically died in a fire in the bar. You know, watching my dad going through that grief and that family tragedy, you know, I'd Be There was written about someone, I suppose, where, you know, you see the person trying very hard to be strong, to be positive, despite, you know, whatever they've been through. And my dad's very much that kind of person. He'd always do his best to be a very positive person and to live life in a positive way. And he's great fun and cracking jokes, and he's the deep side to him too, of course. But, you know, but he's had a lot of tragedy in his life, and that was what that song was about. And I think a lot of people would have said to me the words of the song really resonated with them. Because the words of it are, I see you, you know, I see the bravery with which you try to smile, and I know you, I know your history would make a grown man cry. The words of it are about, you see the person, you know, doing their best to live a good life and to be positive, but you know that they've been through the wars, like, you know, and a lot of people, and about the love you have for them, you know, when you're obviously related to each other and stuff.
Were you ever nervous releasing songs like that when they connect to you so closely and they're in your family?
Yeah, you would be nervous because, of course, if people responded negatively, obviously they're deeply personal, but no one ever did, thank God, to those songs anyway. They are deeply personal, but, you know, I think, you know, people are very clever, and Irish people are, they know their music and they're very clever, and they know, the main thing they know really, you know, and I think irrespective actually of what kind of voice you have, they know if something is heartfelt or if it isn't. People pick up on it. And I, as the years have gone on, I've realised, you know, it's not even just about being a good singer either. It's actually about singing with emotion. Like, there's some world-class singer-songwriters out there like Leonard Cohen and Bob Dylan. They may not have the most astounding vocal abilities in the world, but they're very heartfelt in the way they write and the way they sing. And, you know, that's one thing I'd say to our students in school as well, or even when we're singing as part of the choir, you know, the technical side of it is one thing. And I trained for years technically and did opera singing for years, and I probably went to singing lessons for about 15 years. But, like, putting all that aside, it doesn't matter a jot if there isn't genuine emotion behind it. That's what it's about, like, you know. And of course you have to sing in tune, and, you know, you can't be singing like away off tune. It's within reason. But basically what it comes down to is people connecting with the emotion of what you write and what you sing, and people tend to know deep down if that rings true for them or not, you know.
Mm-hmm. Katrina, you also teach students, as you were saying. Is it difficult for, you know, children that are getting into music nowadays? Because there is a big competition there, and you have the likes of people going on, let's say, social media platforms, and all of a sudden they're signed record deals. Is it harder for children now?
It's easier in one way and harder in another. It's easier in the sense that there's a lot more you can do. And, you know, even I'm the same as them myself in that, you know, we're all singer-songwriters these days are going to be active on their social media platforms and their Facebook and Instagram and YouTube channels and TikTok and so on. But then I suppose it's harder because there's more people doing it, because it is more accessible, there's more people doing it, because recording at home or little home-based studios is an option now. And I mean, I record some of my vocals at home. My husband's a sound engineer. So, you know, sometimes, you know, during COVID now, for instance, people might have recorded the music up the country and I recorded the vocals at home. And that's very convenient. But I suppose because there's so many more people doing that, then it does create more competition. So in that way, it's harder to cut through, to get noticed. You know, there's a little bit of luck involved. I suppose they always say it's luck meets preparation. You know, you have to have your training done on your instrument and on your vocals, and you have to work really hard at songwriting. And I would have worked very hard myself over at the songwriting and at that craft over the last 20 years. And you're learning all your life. You're never done learning or working at it either. But it's harder in the sense that there's more people doing it, yeah, because it's more accessible. Like back when I started off doing music, you had to pay thousands for studio time. It was frightfully expensive. And I remember, you know, working 3 and 4 jobs in Dublin trying to pay your rent and bills and trying to save, you know, you literally had to save thousands. So that's why I went after a record deal fairly quickly, because I quickly realised, you know, it was going to be very hard for me to pay for the thing. You know what I mean? Every time you wanted to do a demo, it was 4 and 5,000 euro, like, to get anything of decent quality. Whereas now you can do it for far cheaper. Like now, you know, you can release a single for about 1,500 euro would be about the standard price of it. Maybe cheaper if people are doing it in the home studio, but there is more competition though with that, so there's, you know, there's the flip side. Yeah.
Finally, Katrina, if you were to give one bit of advice to anyone, what would it be?
I think just perseverance is a huge thing. You know, work in their craft, persevere if they feel they're really passionate about music. I think, I suppose probably one single piece of advice I'd give a lot of my students in school as well who are interested in pursuing music as a career is nowadays very many people and very many artists and singer-songwriters have multiple income streams. So keep their mind open, like they might do a bit of DJing and singing. They might do a little bit of, you know, teaching guitar, piano part-time and they're singing. So they won't starve, you know, for the times that the gigs are quiet. To keep their mind open to doing different things. You know, one thing my parents, I suppose, always said to me was, you know, learn how to do bar work, learn how to do teaching, learn how to do your music. Like, be prepared to turn your hand to different things, because there will be quiet times with music. There's busy times and there's quiet times. You know, for me now, at the moment, we're flat out busy. I've just joined a local band called Fill in the Blanks, and we're really busy doing, we're opening up the Rose of Tralee for the Roses and their families on the 18th of August up in the Meadowlands. And we're playing in Turner's Bar after the Rose Parade the next day. And we're, we're playing then in the Square the 21st of August. And we're flat out. Mm-hmm. But you've quiet times as well. We're also doing Killarney Races the following weekend. We have 2 gigs in one day, and then doing Ballyroe Goes Retro on Saturday, August 26th. And there's times you're flying and you're really busy. But then, for instance, you know, the likes of COVID, no one saw that coming. And a lot of singer-songwriter friends of mine, you know, were gutted and devastated and left without any income for those few years. So, like, I think, you know, we all have to keep our feet in the ground and be able to do different things while you're waiting to get there. And you might be doing 2 things concurrently. You might be out playing gigs by night. You might be working in a shop by day, or working in a bar, or somehow supplementing your income, or, you know, doing a little bit of work online, or graphic designer. I've had friends of mine, I suppose, who've done all sorts of things. And of course, people want to plough the majority of their time into their passion if it's their music, but you have to live as well. So, you know, I suppose be prepared to keep an open mind. And from my observations of it, like, even I suppose a lot of singer-songwriters do diversify. They might, you see a lot of the female singers might be, you know, doing brand ambassadorships for different makeup brands or fashion. You know, they sort of bring all their interests together. And again, I kind of observe a lot of it as cult of personality these days. So they might present a TV show and sing and be ambassador for X, Y, or Z brand of clothing. Or, you know, I think it's to keep an open mind and broaden out your horizons and keep different income streams coming in case that if one thing has gone a bit quiet, you can bring in a few bob another way.
And through all that living as well can come lyrics.
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know what, if you're kind of stuck in an ivory tower, locked away from living your life, as I kind of was that year in a way, say when I was being paid to sit at home and write songs by the record company that year, when you're out living your life, actually, is when the songs come, you know, and living life, experiencing life. And a lot of singer-songwriters will say the same, you know, that sort of when you're, you know, the music thing is kind of like an alternate reality, and it's real life that brings the lyrics, actually, and that brings the songs. And like what I find often these days, it's when you're kind of going for a walk or driving or something that lyrics pop into your head. And as you say, outliving, you know, normal life with relationships and friendships and day-to-day events and all the kind of things that happen for people. That's what brings the good songs. So, yeah, the more in touch, I suppose, with all of that, and the more grounded you stay, I think the easier that flows to you than cutting yourself off from all of that. So, yeah, just to stay grounded and be prepared, as I said, to do, turn your hand to different things. And, of course, you know, to work hard at the craft, that would be a vital piece of advice too. And I suppose not to be afraid either to put themselves out there, because I know for myself, looking back, there were times, I remember someone saying to me, going, what's the point of having all these beautiful songs if no one's going to hear them outside your bedroom, you know? And it is scary to put yourself out there, or maybe to play your song for other people for the first time. But if you don't, you know, it's like someone who's afraid to date anybody. You know, you're missing out on a lot if you don't. You can lock yourself away and not play your songs for anybody. But that might be an awful shame, you know, if there's a good song there. It's about sharing with people and connecting with people and trying to let go of the fear. And I suppose I always say to my own students, again, no matter what age people are, they always feel that little bit of fear. I see it myself all the time, but both myself and loads of other very established singer-songwriters, that little bit of insecurity or fear is in everybody. And I remember even hearing, you know, Kevin Costner's eulogy about Whitney Houston when she went to audition for The Bodyguard. Apparently she was terrified and, you know, she had done the wrong makeup and it all pour down off her face in front of the cameras. It was a different type of makeup for film than it was, say, for stage. And she felt like, you know, she wasn't the right fit for the role. She was really insecure about the fact she felt she didn't have enough acting experience. And look at how The Bodyguard turned out. You know, he saw the potential in her and, you know, wanted her to do it. But, I mean, it just goes to show even the world's most amazing singers have that little bit of insecurity and fear whenever they're coming to do anything new or different. And you just have to try and push past it. And that's what I often say to my students as well, when they're going in and they're very nervous doing exams, just try and push past it. Just try and step out of our own way. And I suppose, you know, tell yourself positive things in your mind rather than letting the fearful voice take over. Because no matter what age any of us are, there's still a bit of that we have to push past. You still have to continue working at it. And everyone really is in the same boat. So it's just trying to push past it. And you know, wonderful things can happen when you do. And like that, even at the present time, I might have thought a number of years ago when I had my children, that'll be the end of that now, you know. And for a couple of years, I did have to park it up, you know, when my children were small and they were babies and toddlers, you know. They needed undivided attention and they still need a huge amount of attention. But now, but then I was able to kind of recreate my life where I was able to keep the music going now side by side, within reason. I'm not going to be taken off touring Australia and abandoning my children. But you know, like joining, say, now Fill in the Blanks locally, yeah. And we're doing lovely high profile events like the Killarney Races and the Rose of Tralee opening event there in the Meadowlands. You know, you're still able to do lovely profile gigs and the TG Carr Show, Glortier, I'm able to do that every year, and nice gigs in the National Concert Hall. You know, still being able to do nice gigs like that, you know, alongside having the children. Like, that was a fear I had. You know, we were all coming to different stages of life, and obviously having my children is a massive joy as well, and I've written songs about them, you know. But you know you just have to kind of keep recreating your life as you go along, stay grounded, keep multiple income streams coming in, because I think COVID showed us that, you know, it's important to be flexible and versatile. But you do want to channel, I suppose, a lot of energy into honing your craft if being a singer-songwriter or a musician is something you want to do, of course.
Katrina, it was so lovely to talk to you and hear your story. And thank you so much for taking the time to come in here today.
Not at all, Kai. My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.